So did
No.
that actually happen? You had a cup of tea on the commode, or was that your mother that had the cup of tea on the commode?
Well, at this point, mom could no longer walk, and it was not safe for her to try to get her in and out of the bathroom. So we had a commode bedside. Sometimes Mother Nature took a little longer than was comfortable for either one of us. One day, kind of as a joke, I asked her, her favorite beverage was a cup of tea with skim milk and no sugar. And
Right.
I said, "Would you like a cup of tea while we're waiting?" So it became a hit, and that became part of our morning ritual.
Welcome to Concrete Build Crypto Financing, where we explore the intersection of real estate and crypto financing. We invite leaders, experts, and both real estate and crypto investors on our show to gain knowledge into the revolutionary new field of tokenized real estate. First, here's a word from our sponsor. What if we could invest in real estate with just a few clicks? Introducing Concrete Build, CBLD, where real estate meets blockchain. With CBLD, you can fund and own a stake in tokenized real estate backed by commercial properties, earn passive income, invest securely, and help solve the housing crisis. The future of real estate is here. Are you ready? Invest today at concretebuild.org. Concrete Build, tokenizing properties, tokenizing wealth. And tonight, I would like to introduce our guest. Our guest tonight is Mark Porro. Mark Steven Porro. He is an expert voice in the field of caregiving from his son's POV. Mark chronicled his experience in his multiple award-winning memoir, A Cup of Tea on the Commode, My Multitasking Adventures of Caring for My Mom, and How I Survived to Tell the Tale. We are delighted to have him here tonight. Please join me in welcoming Mark Steven Porro. How are you doing today, Mark?
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Now, before we got started today, we were talking a little bit about where you live. Go, just tell us a little bit about the beautiful architecture that we see in the background and a little bit about where you live.
Yeah, it's a sad, sad story. Yeah, I live in the south of France in a little village called Pézenas. It's in southwest France, and it's in the largest wine-growing region in the world, which is great if you're into wine. If you're not, it's a frickin' nightmare. I happen to be into the wine, so it's good. And we're about 20 minutes from the sea, and it's a lovely, very creative little village. And the people are nice, and most of them apologize for their bad English. So that doesn't help my French. So I think my role here is to help them all with their bad English.
How nice is that? I'm into wine, so I would love a visit there someday. So I love to start off my podcast by asking all of my guests, what do you see as the future of real estate, and how do you think that crypto might play a part in that future?
Well, if you're looking, let's say, at the United States, you have a president who's very much into the crypto. I own some crypto. I bought a bunch of stuff. I figured I'd just do it and not worry about it, and let's just see where it goes. So they say,
Right.
don't invest in what you can't afford to lose. So I put some money into it in 2017. I haven't touched it. And it's very complicated to touch it anyway. So if that blew up to something nice, I may use it actually for real estate because it's another form of financing your goals or your dreams. So that's kind of exciting. But if I could ever figure out how to tap into it, that would be lovely. So I do have to find somebody because I know I've got like 8,000 passwords and all this kind of stuff on a little stick that will help me get into it. So
That's
if you
true.
can help me break that code, that would be lovely. But I have a feeling that a lot of people cannot access their crypto. So it's out there somewhere in cyberspace. So
Are you referring to your passwords, or are you just referring to the money that you have in crypto, that your actual
well, I know it's there because I
name?
have some apps that tell me, the ups and downs,
Got it.
and so I do follow that, and not too closely. But then there was a point where I was going to say, well, maybe I'll cash out now. And then I looked into how to do that, and I had to create maybe 15 to 20 passwords and all kinds of crazy stuff to try to log it. Anyway, it's insane.
Again.
There is a guy locally in town from England that apparently is a crypto king. And so we talked about it. He said, if you ever need any help, let me know. So I haven't tapped into that yet, but I'll
Well,
wait till it looks very good. But I own this place, so I don't need it for this place. It's an exciting new thing, and it cuts out the middleman. I think all that stuff has some very positive aspects to it. And so it's a new frontier.
for sure. Rather than cashing out, you can simply purchase real estate with your crypto. And that is really what concrete build financing is all about. We're in the process of purchasing. The frontier is already here where you can purchase real estate with your crypto. So now you have an alternative asset that's able to buy a very stable asset, such as real estate. And that is really what we're excited to bring to the market, is being able to tokenize real estate, be able to purchase real estate with your crypto. And so you'll have not only the appreciation of your crypto, but also the appreciation of the real estate. So tell us a little bit about your book. That sounded like a very interesting experience that you had with your mother. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I was a carefree bachelor living in Los Angeles, having a great time. I had no children, was never married. I gave all that up to become a first-time parent to a guilt-tripping, grumpy as all get out, sharp-tongued lady who could barely remember my name, and that happened to be my mother. And so I moved back from Los Angeles to New Jersey, my childhood home. Within that year that she had this near-death experience, I jumped in and took over 24/7 care. It's rare for a son to do that, but I had a good relationship with actually both of my folks. And so I jumped in because I thought my mom deserved better.
That's
And I tried to make her end of life experience as joyful as it could be. And it turned out to be pretty good. It was a great opportunity for me. And she left this world, I think, in a way that would be envious of most people.
beautiful. And how long did you care for her?
3.5 years is what's chronicled. So I didn't do the 24/7 right away, but
Got
this
it.
incident happened where I stayed with her for several weeks and then went back to LA and then came back and forth for a bit. And then by the end of the year, I moved full time back into my childhood home.
Yes. And you mentioned that oftentimes sons don't do this. And do you think it's because of the bodily functions that you have to deal with? It's kind of not something that men normally do. Why do you think that sons will shy
Well,
away?
I think because the women are most of the women are more nurturing, I would say. And also they are mothers.
Yes.
And also I think they may be forced to do it because the brothers or the sons don't want to do it.
Right.
It's about a 60-40 split now.
Okay.
And since the book was released, there's a lot of people that I've met and heard from, and as more and more guys are jumping into this because I found it very rewarding. It's of course very stressful mentally, physically,
Of
and
course.
emotionally.
Yeah.
And then for a son, since I had no children, this was my first child and her life was in my hands and I'm changing diapers and all that stuff. You're seeing your mother naked for the first time. And
Yeah.
you see what the years have done to her and how cruel gravity can be and things like that. I was very fortunate because when it all started, hospice was called.
Board.
And so my younger sister and I hung out with hospice because we didn't know, we were on death watch. And we weren't sure how long mom was going to be with us. So we hung out with them to learn all the tips and tricks because we wanted to be as hands-on as possible for as long as mom wanted to be here. And after a few weeks, she kind of snapped out of it. And I think I have a chapter in the book called A Silent Scream. And I think it was a cry for help. She wanted love back into her house and into
Oh,
her life. And so with all
yeah.
her kids there, that was there. And I think she decided to give it another shot.
I love that. I definitely would like to get a copy of this book. I have two sons, so I've often wondered, because not having a daughter, what that would look like, if I ever needed that type of care. So that's encouraging to hear that sons are catching up.
Well, it's funny because before it was published, I did a presentation here. There's a lot of expats and a lot of older expats that live in this village. So there was a group that I did a presentation to, and I thought it would be good for baby boomers because when I was caring for my mom, I had a friend going through something similar with her father. And so I shared some of the things I was doing and some of the things I learned from hospice, and she got some benefit out of it. So I thought maybe a book is the best way because I lived in Hollywood, and my first instinct is to write a screenplay to turn an experience or an inspiration into a movie. And so I didn't know what I was going to do, but I took a lot of notes and a lot of videos and a lot of photographs. And then when my friend seemed to get something out of what I was sharing with her, I thought, oh, a book is going to be the fastest thing. But also I had more control over it since it was a very personal story. And then I found a publisher who it resonated with. And so that was very cool. And so I worked with their editors for, I think, a little over a year, because I really wanted it to be good. And it was my first book. I had experience writing jokes and scenes and screenplays, but not a memoir. And so I studied the genre first, got it to a good place. And then this publisher liked it. And then we started working with their editors. I think everybody's been really happy with the results because it's won a bunch of literary awards. The response I've gotten from people who it's touched is the most important thing. And that's something I didn't really think about. You pour your heart and soul into something, you don't know if it's going to resonate or find an audience. And this thing is really doing well. And the stories people have shared have just been amazing. So it's been really, very rewarding in a nice way. And I know my mom's smiling about the whole story.
I love it. So tell our viewers where they can find a copy of this book and tell us the name of the title of the book again.
It's called A Cup of Tea on the Commode. If anybody Googles that, we're everywhere. I've got a YouTube channel with a bunch of funny teasers. It's on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest and now with Blue Sky and stuff. So it's everywhere. And there's been a lot of interviews and a lot of press about it. There's four versions. So it's the paperback, large print paperback, ebook, and audiobook. All are on Amazon. But some versions are on Barnes & Noble and Kobo. And so there are some brick and mortar stores around the world that have the book. But the safest thing is probably to get it on Amazon, because we're going to be running a Mother's Day sale, I think May 7th through the 14th. On Amazon and Kobo for $4.99 for the ebook.
So did that actually happen? You had a cup of tea on the commode, or was that your mother that had a cup of tea on the commode?
Well, at this point, mom could no longer walk, and it was not safe for her to try to get her in and out of the bathroom. So we had a commode bedside. Sometimes Mother Nature took a little longer than was comfortable for either one of us. One day, kind of as a joke, I asked her, her favorite beverage was a cup of tea with skim milk and no sugar. Right. And I said, would you like a cup of tea while we're waiting? So it became a hit, and that became part of our morning ritual. So that was my unique approach to this whole thing. So it's that what's fun about the book, it's not a how-to book. I say it's a what I did book. If you get something out of it, great. If nothing else, there's a lot of laughs. It's very entertaining because both of my folks are pretty funny and my siblings are too. And I think I've luckily inherited some of that. And so people say they laugh and they cry and get things out of it. So it's fun.
Those are the best books, Mark, for sure. Yeah. I really love what you shared about your mother and the laughs and the tears. I still think that you can make that into a screenplay someday.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of talk from my people and contacts in Hollywood, but I know how Hollywood works, so I'm not holding my breath.
But
if we had some people seriously interested, I would do the first pass on the screenplay. We'll go from there. But I've got another book focusing more on my dad that I'm in the middle of, so that'll happen before the movie about a cup of tea and the commode comes out. So
I love it. Well, you know, I like to tie this conversation up. We talked a little bit about real estate. We talked a little bit about crypto. And we definitely talked a lot about moms. So as a mom, and like you mentioned, Mother's Day is coming up. I encourage everyone to get a copy of A Cup of Tea on the Commode. And also, while you're at it, get a copy of Concrete Built Crypto Financing, this book right here, if you want to learn more about how to earn money with tokenized real estate, or best yet, if you have crypto already, how to use that money and purchase real estate with it so that you don't have to worry about how to access your crypto dollars, crypto profits. So again, if you want to hear a little bit more about Concrete Build, just go to concretebuild.org, Concrete Build, tokenizing properties, tokenizing wealth.